Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Dr. Victor and the Rasta Rebels have cemented themselves as one of the number one concert bands in South Africa. For more than 40 years, Dr. Victor has been crafting and creating an uplifting, up-tempo sound that has earned the singer, musician, songwriter and producer an enviable reputation on the South African music scene and abroad. In the 1980s, Dr. Victor was in the band CC Beat. They managed to secure a record contract with CCP EMI label. They later signed to Defon Records, where they worked and toured with top South African acts like Chico, Ivan Chaka Chaka, and Ricardo. Later, CC Beat changed their name to Taxi and did session performances for the likes of Lucky Dube and other bands. Released from Defon Records in 1991, they were introduced to nightclub owner Chris Galakis. Dr. Victor soon found himself in the studio with the session project doing Eddie Grant classics. The cover project was recorded as the Rasta Rebels and became a major success, which featured hits like Give Me Hope Joanna, I Don't Wanna Dance, and others. The band later changed their name to the Rasta Rebels and enjoyed the stardom they received countrywide. In 1991, Dr. Victor went solo and released a number of chart-topping singles and albums. Between 1995 and 1997, Dr. Victor was invited to open for international stars such as Paul Simon, Gloria Estefan, Janet Jackson, and Tina Turner. He has won 2 South African Music Awards for the songs Shambhala in 1995 and Sunshine Days from his Remixes album in 2003. After an illustrious solo run, Dr. Victor once again teamed up with the Rasta Rebels and released The Best of the Rasta Rebels in 2001. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Dr. Victor. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm in Glen Hazel, Johannesburg, and this is where I live.
Dr. Victor, tell us, how did the name Dr. Victor come to be?
Many years ago when we started out, I think it was 1992, we started out as Dr. Victor and the Rasta Rebel. So we were 5 singers, but the company we joined, They weren't ready for a big band like us. You know, we were like a 8-piece band with 5 singers. And we only had 2 microphones working. So every day when the guys would go for lunch, you know, they go for their bunny chows or whatever they're having while we're practicing, I would try to fix 1 microphone. And then I got it right. You know, you just open the diaphragm in the chassis of the microphone and you see what maybe the blue eye is loose or the red one is loose. Anyway, third day they came back, they said, "You're always busy with surgery." Oh, Dr. Victor, as well, it's just a nickname. So it stuck throughout the months, and by the time we released Give Me Hope Joanna, we called ourselves Dr. Victor and the Rasta Rebels.
Okay, so now let's rewind before that. What age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think, cool, I want to be in this creative world? And how did that journey progress?
I must have been about 12 years old when I really enjoyed music, you know. I was born and bred in a Northern Cape in a place called Kimberley, you know. So back in the day, I'd say around 1974, 75, so we had a communal tap. So we didn't have water in our yard as well. So one of my uncles came and played the guitar, and he was quite a heavy drinker. So we just sitting in the adults sitting around and having a good time, and they played the guitar, and I was just in awe of how he was playing. After the get together, you know, he said he's leaving now. And then my mom said, "No, you can't take the guitar. You drank too much. You know, they're gonna take the guitar from you." You know, he had to walk the dark streets to get to his township. So he left the guitar, and the next morning I saw the guitar on a wardrobe, and I got in a chair and I just fiddled and noodled on the guitar a little bit. I just fiddled on the guitar. So my mom caught me and I said, "Get away from your uncle's guitar." And an hour later, I was there again. And then my mom said, "Okay, if you take the water gallon and the wheelbarrow and you go and fetch water down the street. That was my chore. Then you can play for half an hour. So quickly we took the wheelbarrow and I went for the water, and I came back with the water and I played a little bit. I didn't really know what I was doing, but it sounded like music to my little ears. So when that uncle came back a week later, he showed me a few things. He said, this is A and this is C and this is G, because I didn't know what it was, you know, because music is quite involved. So he showed me the few things, and I realized just with the four chords that he showed me. So I remember the first song I played, it was a song by Cliff Richard, the young one. So just playing that song over and over. And then the second one I played was many years ago. It was, I remember, I believe it was 1976, 78. I played a song by George Benson because it was very easy. You just slide your hand up and down in the A position and the G position. And the song was called On Broadway. It's from taken from an album called Weekend in L.A. by George Benson. So I played that song, not as involved as George Benson, but I knew there was something. And so that was growing up. And then fast forward. So Kimberley is one of those towns, in a little dorpies, you know, one of those towns is in between Cape Town and in between Johannesburg. So all the popular artists like Johnny Clegg and Sipho Mabuse and Neville Nash, Lionel Peterson, back in the day, they would come down to Kimberley and perform. So one day my dad took me to go and watch Richard John Smith. He was like Michael Jackson of his time, you know, in the 70s. He was from Cape Town. So we saw what he was doing. And he had long before wireless microphone. So he pulled his cable to the couple of front row chairs. And he shook my hand, my little hand, you know. And I knew that there must have been something about that experience, him shaking my hand. And I kid you not. And I knew that I was born to do this thing. And just a little time and nurture myself. And fast forward, few years later, after matric, we decided to move up to Johannesburg in search of our gold, you know, the gold city, you know, to see where all these artists were living. Hopefully we'll bump into them in a music store or something, the Johnny Cleggs, the Hot Sticks Mabuses, and so forth. So we came in and we just struggled. The first place we played in the early 80s, I believe it was 1983, we played at a place called Fun Valley. We played at Fun Valley. We played there, and then the remarkable thing was during apartheid still. So all the festivals, Johannesburg festivals, were all held there. So I saw the helicopters, Belly Wu, the cinemas, and Lucky Dube, Stimela, all the bands were back in the day playing there. A year later after that, we decided now we're going to record. So we had a couple of demos, and we went to CCP Record Company, and our first album, I think it was a Mac, they called it back, it was LP, vinyl. Mm-hmm. They called it a Mac single back then.
Yeah.
It was a song called Panzula. It was just a total flop, you know. And then we went back into clubbing again, and we played from, you know, it was a big deal to play clubs, you know, residency. You know, those days, it weren't good money. You'd get a residency, you play for a month, and you get something like 10 grand for playing from Wednesday to Saturday, every week, for 10 grand for the whole band. That's what we played. And fast forward, it wasn't until, I think, towards 1988, we were playing in Hillbrow, a club called Belinapoli. It was a Greek owned club, Belinapoli in Hillbrow. And a gentleman by the name of Chris Galakis and the Yeez band. There was a nightclub in Hillbrow. It was called the Thunderdome in Johannesburg.
Thunderdome. Yes.
It was the place. Just adjacent to it was Idols, also another, but the Thunderdome was the place to be. So they were playing at the Thunderdome, and they played there for a year or so, and they felt they were just a little bit burned out, and they needed a replacement. So they came and watched my band, what these little farm boys can do from Kimberley. And they liked what we were doing, because we were playing U2, Level 42, Sunday, Bloody Sunday, you know, with or without, whatever was popular, you know, in Billy Idol, whatever, a mixture of the R&B and rock and stuff. They said, "No, we're okay. You know, we just need a bit of a more practice." And so anyway, we got the job. But at the time, unbeknownst to me, Chris started his own independent record label, just a cover label, and he was looking for artists. And one of the first songs that Chris recorded was he needed a singer for, and the song was called "Give Me Hope, Joanna." So he needed a singer, just a cover reggae project, you know, because they didn't have songwriters at the time to pursue original songs, you know. But also they particularly wanted to record that song because it was banned at the time in South Africa, "Give Me Hope, Joanna," because of what the song was about lyrically. So Joanna is basically Johannesburg. So they were rebelling against the apartheid regime at the time. They decided they're going to record that song and they needed a singer. So they tried other two singers. They didn't like what they were doing. He didn't know that I was already singing that song in clubs, you know, because we went to Namibia and we were playing there during the Namibian, running up to the Namibian independence, you know, the SWAPO government taking over from Southwest of Africa, which they were belonged to South Africa basically. So they got independence from Southwest Africa to Namibia, and we played for there for 6 months. And "Hope, Joanna" was one of my normal songs that I was singing. So I went in the studio. I still had my words written out, just a little. I was a little bit nervous because it was your studio. And I sang the song and I got my $250. It was $250 for a 3 hour session. I did the song, must have been about in 45 minutes to an hour. I was finished with the song. I got my $250 and I left. I was living in Hillbrow, the Fontana Inn. 2 months later, Chris Galakis phoned me on my pager. Nobody had cell phones. I had a Telstra pager. I looked at my pager, said, "Chris, call Chris Galakis." It was also a Greek gentleman. So I phoned him from the tiki box and he said, "Please come see me at my office. I got good news for you." Went to his office. I said, "What's it?" I said, are you ready?" And he said, "Are you ready for the good news? I want you to change your name from CC Beat," because the band was called CC Beat. The old registration of Kimberley was CC. We called ourselves Beat of Kimberley. So he said, "I want you guys to go on a national tour, the garden route, you know, to do a tour as Rasta Rebels." But I already had a single with him in the pipeline, a song called "Tambay," which was also very popular in the black market. So his concept was Rasta Rebels, a cover concept. Rasta Rebels. I said, "Why don't we call ourselves, you know, like Bob Marley and the Wailers, Dr. Victor, Rasta Rebels?" You know, it just sounded like Phil Collins and Genesis or any of those names, you know. We went on tour, called ourselves Dr. Victor and the Rasta Rebels. Man, we drove to Cape Town. It was unheard of for bands to fly those days. Now with Kalula and FlySafair and all these little airlines, you know, it's easy, it's cheap. But we drove down. But when we got to Cape Town, we were accepted like we were almost like the Beatles, you know. I said, "Wow, there's something here." So we did the Munston, all those dorpies there, Worcester, Mamasbury, you know, Cape Town, whatever. And we came back, and he asked me, "Well, what do you think?" I said, "Well, I'm convinced. We'll do it. We'll change ourselves." And as they say in English, the rest is history. That's how it started.
So you've been in the entertainment creation world all these decades, all these years. What keeps you motivated to keep creating and keep performing?
First of all, I'm a student of music. You know, besides being a music, I just love seeing people happy and enjoying themselves. And I went in school. I went academically. I wasn't an A grade student, but I wasn't stupid. You know, but my parents wanted me to become a school teacher or whatever, a policeman, whatever the jobs were, important jobs back in the day. But I wouldn't have it, you know. But I found this thing. The God has blessed me with this gift of music, and I just find that for me, I found a way to find that missing link that can make people happy and forget about the misery and the sorrows and the bills at home. We can make them happy for the 45 minutes or the hour when we're on stage. Yeah, I'm good at some couple of other things. I'm also good at with my hands, you know, woodworking. I love woodworking. But music, I think I'm particularly very good with it. And especially, I won't say I'm a songwriter, a person like Mozart or Bach or Bobby McFerrin or Bob Dylan or any of those names or Neil Diamond. I know how to entertain people. Mm. And I've done that for the past 42 years, and I'm good at that. Yeah, to answer your question, there's so much happening in the world, and people need happiness. And I think me and my band, Dr. Victor and the Rasta Rebels, we can supply that.
Tell us about the latest project and latest release.
Our new song, No Fear, is a bit of a uncharted territory for me. I've never done an Afrobeats/I'm a piano song. So these two guys from up North Africa, my new friends, if I say new friends, I've known them for the past 10 years, and they've been coming to the studio, and we mess around every now and then. I don't know why, but mostly in the winters, you know, for the past 10-year winters. So we just write songs. In No Fear, we worked on it in January, in fact, December. And it came together this year, in the summer of this year. And I kept playing that song, and it wasn't written by me. It was written by a guy and I by the name of Daniel Leonga. And his name is actually, his stage name is D-Boy. And we collaborated. There's another guy, his name is David Mutanda. He's from the Congo DRC. And I met them because they heard about Dr. Victor. They came to my house. I have a studio here in Glen Hazel. They came here. And then we just became friends. And over the years, they came whenever they need a studio, I availed a studio for them. So they come around, and we always jam, and we make songs. And No Fear was one of those songs. And I just felt it was a strong contender. Why don't release it? It's the strongest of the songs, of the dozens of songs that we have in on our hard drives. And we released it. So No Fear was actually written by Daniel Leonga.
You reference that it's your first, or diving into a new genre of Afrobeats, I'm a piano type music. So being in the industry for so many years and creating in a specific way, when you are confronted or you are challenged or you're diving into a new genre, a new world or a new aspect of the industry, do you find it extremely challenging and you have to take a moment to learn, or do you just say, bring it on and let's go?
There's always a learning curve to something new musically. I think it's with anything. It was a bit of a challenge because it's not normal English. It's almost like a bit of a Nigerian/Jamaican slang thing. Pidgin English, you know, like I'm waiting, man. Calm down, man. You know, say, Fire, you know, that kind of thing. So a lot of it wasn't English, you know. And I had to write it in my way, but lucky Daniel guided me through. Because I think they're neighboring to Nigeria, you know. Mm. I think Afrobeat stem from Nigeria, by the way. I think Calm Down with Selena Gomez, it was one of the biggest Afrobeat songs that I know of. But there's Davido. There's just a lot of them, you know.
Yes, yeah.
So
yeah.
But most of them come from Nigeria, and these guys are neighbors to Nigeria. So they already speak with an accent, but they just over-exaggerated into Jamaican, almost like Shabarang/Bob Marley thing. So we played with that Nigerian vernacular, and that's how the song came about. My cover days in the 90s, I used to do quite a bit of Shaggy and Shabarangs, you know. So it was a little bit familiar for me, you know, but the groove was still fresh and different. So I didn't question him. I said, no, don't pronounce it. Then don't say love, say love, you know, things like that. It was quite fun. So I remember the first words, nobody loved the sun, I love me, no, say, hear my say, I'm gonna make a crop in that bitch, can I put back on my chicken, finally loving, but I'm gonna love it, you know, say, touch this, you know, that stuff. So it was fun to get into that vibe again, you know.
Yes,
I'm always up for challenge, and I enjoy it myself.
What's the difference for you in performing and sort of recording covers compared to when you're performing and recording originals?
The covers, there's always a template. And you work from that template. And the words are there, the groove is there, the chords are there. For me, you know, I won't say I'm famous for always doing a cover almost like I always try to add my own twist to it, my own twist to it. And I've been very successful. I've done, it's up to date, I've done three big Eddie Grant songs: Walking into Sunshine, Give Me Old Joanna, I Love the Truck was another one for me. But when I met Eddie Grant in Johannesburg, I think it was in 2008, and a lady by the name of Miss Midler phoned me, and she said, we are hosting Eddie Grant. Would you like to meet him?" I said, "Well, sure." You know, I went to the studios and we drove around, and I was just piggybacking, you know, and just showing him around. And he said, "No, by the way, Eddie Grant, this is Dr. Victor. This is the guy. He's probably more famous, more popular than you
Oh,
with
wow.
your song,
Yes.
you know." So they said it was quite a bit of a gentleman, and I didn't mind that. And I was quite nervous when we had lunch, and they played him the songs. They said they pressed play, and I was looking at his facial expressions when the three songs was finished, and he said, "Why didn't I think of that?" You know, so there was a bit of a compliment. So obviously, I'm probably what 20 years younger than him. And no, I think not what 12 years. I'm 61 now. He's probably 72, something like it.
Okay.
We added our own South African spin to it, and we had fun with it. And even with I had great success with the old 50, 60, 60 song from the 60s by Jimmy Soul, If You Want to Be Happy. And a lot of people, South African people, even older people, they thought it was my song. I listened to the song, and at the same time, I was messing around with elements for Mambo Number 5. So I just incorporated what I heard. Little bit of Monica in my life, little bit of Rita in my soul. If you want to be happy for the rest. Because I wouldn't say the original is boring, but it's very 60s. It wouldn't have worked now. So I edited Mambo Number 5 elements, and that's what we do. You know, we always borrow ideas from DJs, and I see myself as a remixer when I work on covers. And back to your question, when you work on original songs, you have a blank canvas. You strum a chord, maybe have an argument with a wife, and you would have a angry song. If you walk into the studio and you just saw a nice rainbow, or your wife made your favorite meal, and then you're happy. You know, you come with a happy vibe, and you work it from there. And that's you. We have a blank canvas. It can be sad. It can have a melancholy vibe to it, or you're happy, or something in between, and you work it from there. And because my genre of music, I would say, is like African pop rock. You know, that's my kind of music. You know, so I won't say I'm not quite too. I'm a piano, but we have a distinctive song. You were asking in the beginning of the interview, you were asking me, so why does it resonate with so many people and so many cultures, you know, black, white, Indian, colored, Japanese, whatever. So it's just that thing, you know. But because I was born in 1964, so I grew up with Queen, Led Zeppelin, the Bohemian Rhapsody, Santana, whatever, you know. But ABBA, I remember when I was younger, I had a crush on one of the ABBA singers, you know. Because I just love the music, the melodies. Those two guys just wrote beautiful songs, you know. And people would say, "No, it's very emasculate," you know. But I don't care, you know. They have good songs, you know. It's like Cher, you know, when she came out, I believe, her extensive use of the auto tune, you know. They were just goofing around, and they came up with "I Believe in Love," and they just turned the auto tune full up, and they got a lot of slack for it. But it was a smash hit. You can't talk about Sonny and Cher without talking about that song as well. A lot of times people would criticize me, "Aren't you too commercial?" I said, "Well, so was Neil Diamond, so was Bob Marley. That's my genre of music, you know. It comes with the territory, and I don't mind to make people happy. There is a compromise, you know. You must find a medium, you know. You can't walk into a room and people are sad and you make them more sad. You know, that's not my job. So I would lift them up and do what I do. And I'm glad I'm a musician, and I'm glad God gifted me with this gift of music, and I'm glad I can do that.
What else is coming up over the next few months?
I was just telling my wife at breakfast this morning, it's always been a dream of mine. We being called Dr. Victor and the Rasta Rebels, but we very, very rarely sing. We have a reggae song. And why not, you know? I would sort of like my tribute to Lucky Dube. And I looked up to our reggae star, Lucky Dube. He was killed prematurely in the south of Johannesburg. We lost him at the height of his career. He would go to Jamaica, top Jamaican acts like Ziggy Marley and the Wailers, Ziggy Marley and Bob Marley's children, Damian Marley. They would open up for Lucky. Yeah, and he was South African. You know, he was a Gallo artist. He was South African. And I find that there's a gap in the market. I've been messing around with the idea to do almost a reggae album, but not very rootsy like Peter Tosh or the Wailers or the Chakademas and Pliers, but more almost in the lines of more commercially viable, almost like towards the later days of Bob Marley, you know, the One Loves and the Buffalo Soul. In the red, red wines and stuff like that.
Okay.
So it's not too heavy on the ear, you know what I mean? And I think Bruno Mars had a song like, what do you call it? The happy song.
The lazy song.
The lazy song. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's almost like a reggae song. I put on quite a couple of demos, and once a week, me and the band would get together and just demo it. If I say demo, because the studio is so good, if I say demo, it's almost like finished products. But still demos, because we are changing it. Because I don't like the word demo, because why I say demo? So if I, God forbid, if I die tonight, then those songs should be finals. You know what I mean? They should be released as proper songs, you know? So you must always, I always tell my children, do something well. So in your absence, then it can represent you for what you stood for or your legacy.
Okay, so let's not say that there's no dying tonight.
Yeah, come on, please. Dying, please leave me alone. I have a lot of things to do here.
Dr. Victor, just top of mind, without any reasons, if you had to push play to five artists once we've finished this conversation, and I know this will change every time I ask you because there are millions of them, but if you had to push play to five artists once to finish this conversation, who would those five artists be?
Johnny Clegg, Bob Marley and the Wailers, Earth, Wind and Fire, Celine Dion, and Neil Diamond.
Wow, nice mix. Interesting mix there. So, Dr. Victor, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
We need to be tolerant with each other, and be more forgiving with each other, and just try and live together, because there's enough space on earth for everybody. There's enough sunshine for everybody. Let's just find our space and be mindful and thoughtful and like tolerant and just try and live together and live in peace and harmony.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.